Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds. You remember when Zach Braff tried to make a sitcom about starting his own podcast network and called it, what was it called, Alex Inc.?
No. No one remembers that.
No. That exploded into my brain.
Oof.
Like, the dumbest thing about it was, I never saw the show, but we saw the trailers. Like, we were, it was while we were still at Cracked, but, like, they were, like, his office for his, like, podcast empire was in this big, open, like, warehouse, like a hangar. Like a huge open loft style place, you know, the exact place you don't want to record audio in.
Right, of course.
It's like, did they just do no research
no
into this?
No podcast research.
It's not that. I mean, it's real basic
right.
Stuff.
And it's like, yeah. And you know, like everybody has a podcast, so they're going to watch that and be like, that's not how you podcast.
Right.
This is how you podcast.
Have we started? This is podcasting.
I feel like this can be.
I feel like this is the beginning.
All right. Hi, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
My name is David Bell.
My name is Tom Ryman.
And we just watched The Gentlemen.
The Gentlemen.
Which is, it's funny, Tom, because they were anything but gentle. Yeah.
I want you to imagine a character. Your boss, Mickey Pearson.
You're too smart to be blackmailing us, Fletcher.
Sweet Mary Jane is my vice. Your poison, on the other hand, is and always has been the destroyer of worlds.
You're out of touch, and I would like you to consider an offer.
I am not for sale.
For a long time, I read this as The Gentleman, like singular.
Right.
I didn't realize it was plural. Just because my brain was just glossing that over.
There's many men and they're very gentle.
They're gentlemen.
Yeah.
It was originally called Bush, I think. And then it was called Tough Guys for a while.
Ah. All right.
And then they settled on The Gentleman.
All right. This is Guy Ritchie's newest film. It's his return to crime, like, comedies.
To British gangster shit.
Yeah. Tom, how did you like The Gentleman?
I really liked it, actually. I thought it was quite entertaining.
Yeah. Me, too. Me, too.
There's a couple of some wonkiness with it, but nothing that's, like, nothing that sinks the movie for me.
No. This was one of those movies where I enjoyed it beginning to end, walked out and thought to myself, like, oh, I should probably think of things to talk about. I agree there's some wonkiness in it, but it was wonkiness that, like, afterward, I was like, oh, that's a little, my main, I'll just say it right now. And again, okay, you like Guy Ritchie, right?
I do, yes.
I do too. And I think that's also, I know people who don't like Guy Ritchie, and I think if you don't like Guy Ritchie,
this is extremely not going to be your shit.
Yeah, this is just, it's a Guy Ritchie movie. It panders to exactly what I love about Guy Ritchie movies.
Right. It is 100% Guy Ritchie back on his bullshit.
Yes. And like, I eat it up. I eat his shit.
I cannot wait for his Cash Truck remake starring Jason Statham.
Yes. That said, We should talk about, be fun to see where we rank this in the Guy Ritchie films, but I would say it had one weak point, which is that most Guy Ritchie films, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, Guy Ritchie films they function a lot like heist movies, and not like good heist movies, like dumb heist movies where it's like, oh, but you didn't see this, well, and this and this, and we were doing this all along. And,
well, also, everything goes wrong in Guy Ritchie movies.
Oh, yeah, and that's one of the most,
like,
fun parts.
It's heists pulled off by dumb guys, or guys that are in over their heads.
Or it's, well, I also love, it's always, like, very professional guys. And there's a level of professionalism in this. Like, I guess what I like about a lot of Guy Ritchie movies is some of the characters do exactly what you're saying, like, you should do that. And then some of the characters are idiots. For example, Colin Farrell in this does exactly what I would do if I was in his situation. Which
He was amazing.
He is amazing.
I fucking loved Colin Farrell. Yeah.
Colin Farrell, basically, he's the coach. He trains like young kids to fight, and like is clearly like kind of thuggish, like they do crime stuff.
He's got like, he clearly has a past, but like he's one of these guys that like he has a gym where he trains these like at-risk kids to get them off the street and have them do positive shit.
Right. So he tolerates their crimes, sort of. And then they
he tries to discourage them and like guide them in a different direction.
But he's not going to like call the cops. You know
what
I mean?
No, he's not. Yeah. No.
And that's what happens is a bunch of them get a tip about a weed, like a weed growing place, and they bust in and they videotape themselves beating everybody up. And this isn't the inciting incident. It's just a fun, it's his inciting incident. And the reveal is that they're stealing from Matthew McConaughey, who is in this world like the biggest weed dealer, drug lord.
He's also terrifying.
Yes. Yes. He's great.
Like, he's a seriously bad man.
Yeah.
Like,
I was very worried about his performance at the very beginning, because in the first couple shots, even not like in the first scene, he's like, they say he was American and he moved to England.
Yes.
And that explains it. But what it first sounded like was Matthew McConaughey failing at a British accent.
Oh.
And I was like, uh-oh. And
oh,
then
I
the,
didn't.
And then he
I didn't.
Kind of, oh, yeah.
That thought never entered my mind.
It's only like his first couple lines. And then from then on, it's fine. And I think it's the idea is he's doing the accent of an American who spent a lot of time in England.
Right. He says, he uses some British slang.
Yeah.
But like
the first couple lines, I there was something in the inflection
that
was like, that.
Yeah.
It was very slight. And that's why I was like, uh-oh. was this like Matthew McConaughey's British accent? And I know he's a better actor than that. It wasn't the case.
And some of that might have actually been like subconscious or genuine because he is spending, you know, however many weeks shooting a film completely surrounded by British people.
Right. Like, that's what I'm wondering is that it could be like almost the idea is it's an American person who slightly has a, like an inflection. But
it was interesting seeing an American actor deliver Guy Ritchie dialogue like with that rhythm.
That's one of my favorite things about Guy Ritchie in general is getting to see which actors get to be in the films. Like Colin Farrell, this is his first one, right?
I think so. Yeah.
And Colin Farrell after fucking In Bruges, I was like, I can't fucking wait for him to be in a Guy Ritchie film.
And he's perfect in this.
Yeah, he's perfect.
he's perfect.
So basically his character, the kids like rob him. So instead of like it becoming this big deal, he just goes to Matthew McConaughey's people and he's like, this is what happened. I take full responsibility. We're returning the stuff. They didn't know who you were. Like, and it works out for him for that reason. And it's like, yeah, you just treat him with respect and show up and say, you know, this was an accident.
Yeah, they have him. He has to do a few things for them to pay off the debt, but it's pretty funny, and it winds up in classic Guy Ritchie fashion. All these disparate parts do wind up mattering.
Yes, and that's what you love for Guy Ritchie is all these moving pieces in the end come together.
Yeah.
I guess I haven't gotten
to.
So
you started this off by saying what the weakness was. Yeah.
The weakness was only one little thing. So this all functions like a heist, and it has
sort of
like a heist movie. They always have these moments where they're like, the thing you just saw isn't what actually happened. What I think the thing I want to reference is, of course, Mickey the boxer in the bare knuckle boxer in Snatch, is the idea is, oh, you think they're screwed? Oh no, this whole time Mickey has had a plan, and that works because Mickey is not the protagonist. In this, we learn that the protagonist that we're following has a secret thing that he's been doing with Hugh Grant. And that was the only weakness, is only that, is just, the movie is not telling me.
I would argue that Ray is not the protagonist, because
This is the...
it's honestly kind of hard to, like, I guess McConaughey's technically the protagonist, but it's never told from his point of view.
Right. It's told the most from his, from Ray's point of view. It's the question of, it's the same again with every Guy Ritchie film, is there's not really a protagonist. Mm-hmm. Like, Snatch opens with Turkish narration and ends with it. But obviously,
I would argue that Turkish is the protagonist of Snatch.
Yes, but it's not entirely from his perspective all the time.
No, it's not.
And so that's what I mean. True. Is that there's always kind of a there's never that again. That's why this isn't like a big weak link, because it's what you're saying is that Guy Ritchie films, they kind of have protagonists, but they kind of don't. Mm-hmm. But I would say Ray is the guy that we're with the whole time, who's we hearing the story told to.
We're hearing the story told to him, but it's not.
It's more like Usual Suspects. It's what's basically happening.
Right, because it's Hugh Grant talking the whole time. It's almost more from Hugh Grant's perspective.
Yeah, you're right. Hugh Grant's killing it in this.
He's fucking, man.
He's another actor that was like, I can't fucking wait to see him in a Guy Ritchie film.
This is his second one. He was in Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Right. Which, oh, that fucking, that Man from U.N.C.L.E. reference. There's some weird shit in this movie.
Oh, yeah, it gets weirdly meta at the end, but that's fine.
Well, here's, I thought that I would actually say is the weakest moment in this movie, but it doesn't last long, and it's not that meta.
Like, no, it's not. It's, yeah.
The idea, they have this, Hugh Grant's character is like pitching a script the whole time while he's blackmailing Ray. Like the plot is framed of one man blackmailing another and explaining to them what they know. Mm-hmm. And it's Hugh Grant who plays like, he's like a sleazy private eye.
He's an investigative
reporter.
Journalist, it seems like.
And so he's pitching also this idea as a script while also kind of hitting on Ray.
Yeah, he's such a chaotic character. Yeah. He's so great. Hugh Grant.
And so he wants 20 million pounds.
Right, to not tell anybody what he knows.
Right. And so a lot of the movie is him telling the story. And then, at the end, it's the realization that Ray kind of has the upper hand as well. And that's not even like the main problem of the story. Matthew McConaughey plays Mickey Pearson, who, as we said, is like a drug lord. And he's selling off the biz.
He's trying to get out. He wants to sell off his weed empire and just retire with his wife.
Right. So he's selling it to this other guy who then tells him that he's in a computer game made by his son. Right.
That was him.
Yes. That's Jeremy Strong. Succession is like, that was the realization, is that he's amazing in Succession. He's like one of the main characters in that. And he's nothing like this. And then realizing, oh, he's also the motherfucker in Serenity.
He is. He's the one who tells McConaughey that he's in a computer program.
Yeah, which that must have been on set, like them running into each other.
Oh, man.
It's like, oh, shit. It's you again. Same year, right?
Yeah.
Or at least it was shot the same. Or no,
they were
Serenity,
shot close. Yeah, close. Serenity would have been shot in 2018, probably. Yeah.
That guy, he's got, Jeremy Strong's got a weird fucking career now.
Oh, yeah, he's a fascinating career now.
He's
kind
of, Succession really, like, put him on the map for me, because it was a realization of, like, oh, this, we're going to be seeing a lot of this guy.
I haven't seen it yet. I should get
Succession.
Get on
he's
that.
Very good in that. He's basically, anyway. In Succession, he plays, like, the main son, like, the son that you think is going to inherit everything at the beginning. And he's gives off these, like, really strong Kushner vibes, like the really creepy, like, and he does a very good job at it.
Cool.
See Succession. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, in this film.
Yeah. So he, let's see, shit, he finds out he's in a computer animation. Oh yeah, he wants to buy the...
Yeah, he's gonna buy his empire, but there's this Henry Golding is this other guy named Dry Eye who's also trying to buy it.
Right.
And kind of comes and makes like a real like brazen offer, just comes right to McConaughey's wife to arrange a meeting with him.
And also like a meager offer. compared to, I think, what the other guy's offering, right?
I don't think we ever actually see the number.
He just, no, but he says, like, add a couple more zeros. Like, he says that to him, like, mm-hmm. like your offer is crap, too. It's basically, as Matthew McConaughey feels disrespected by the situation, but also the offer. I mean, that would play into why, what we learn.
Yeah. What the hell was that? Oh, right. It's a whole real gangster shit. This guy has dry eye, basically raid one of McConaughey's stashes by he tells Colin Farrell's boxers where to go to raid it, and they don't know what they're doing. He basically engineers a situation to give himself a reason to, like, kind of lowball McConaughey's offer.
Yes.
He's like, oh, well, your operation's been jeopardized. I can't pay you what you want. I have to pay you much, much right. less.
Yeah, he pays Dry Eye, who goes under his boss, Lord George, mm-hmm. and pays the Colin Farrell's kids, coach's kids.
Who, he just gives them the tip. Yeah, his man gives them the tip of where it is, and then they go steal it.
Yeah, and the movie's kind of them just going back up that chain and, like, figuring out, like, that it's him.
Yeah. And then Dry was supposed to be, like, his second in command, and then he goes rogue and tries to just own the whole operation himself.
Right.
It's this whole... some real gangster shit starts popping off.
Yeah. And again, it's got that beautiful Guy Ritchie thing where there's little things on, like, tendrils on the side that, like, come back around or connect in neat ways. There's a whole thing where so Matthew McConaughey's operation, mm-hmm. I was trying to figure this out. Is the idea is that there's all these estates, mm-hmm. Because as they establish, they're like, man, there's drones now, there's Google Maps, there's social media, there's hikers. You can't really hide a weed farm anymore.
No.
And the idea is that he buys up all these, or he doesn't buy up, but he finds these estates where there's rich fucking motherfuckers who die, leaving these estates to their kids to pay off all the goddamn taxes and stuff. And it's like, right. What are people going to do with these giant houses?
He manages a bunch of lords' estates.
Yeah.
And in return, he builds subterranean weed
on
farms, basically,
yeah.
on their land, because it's okay. private, it's big.
It was interesting, yeah. because, like, that's what I suspected, but they never, like, visually connect the weed farm with the estates, mm-hmm. which was interesting. Like, I thought it was going to be, like, they go into an estate and there's a damn weed farm, like, in the basement or something.
No, it's just on the land.
Yeah,
because remember, he goes to that one guy's house after they raid.
Right.
The one underground one, and tells him he has to move the operation.
Right. And that's the guy I was thinking of is that the guy? One of the guys basically says, hey, can you find my daughter? We're looking for...
That's a different guy, but yeah. It is one of the lords, yeah, that he's managing.
And so he gives that to Ray.
He does.
And he's, you know...
He gives it to Pacific Rim's Charlie Hunnam.
Yes. Who's killing it in this, too.
He was one of my favorite characters. Yeah, he was great.
Yeah. I feel like Guy Ritchie has that really good ability for finding good leading men that aren't people you think of, and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, he spotted Mark Strong. Like, he's...
Oh, yeah.
He's able to sort of spot...
Right.
What's... And, like, obviously Statham. Like, he's able to detect what somebody's strengths are.
Right. Or they were making King Arthur, and he was just like, hey, can I get in one of your cool crime ones? And he's like, all right.
it's a great role.
Yeah.
He sort of does, he likes to write these, like, strong second-in-command characters.
Man, you know who, just thinking of people he's worked with that now need to be in his movies, you know who I would love to see now?
Who's that?
It's fucking Will Smith. In, like, a Guy Ritchie crime film.
That would be pretty sweet, yeah.
Yeah. I'd also like to see Henry Cavill get another go. Because I like Man from U.N.C.L.E., but I feel like, he could use them even more.
They need to make more men from Uncle.
Yeah.
That's a crime.
Yeah.
There's not more of those. There should be six of those.
Yeah. So they have this whole side story, and it's like a classic Kai Ritchie side story where he goes to these junkies' apartment.
This really doesn't seem like it's going to go anywhere.
Right. I love these moments because there's always these moments where it's like, these people are so outclassed that all they have to do is sort of like say, like, sit down. and then they do the thing.
Oh, man.
Because, yeah, they use like a battering ram to get in. The way they operate, again, it's so professional, is they always ask nicely first.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, they're gentlemen, you know.
Yeah, gentlemen.
And then when someone tells them to piss off, they're like, all right. I guess we're going to do this the other way.
We're going to break the door open.
Yeah.
I liked that detail about Charlie Hunnam's character, Ray, is that he's very... They say he has OCD, but it's really... He's just very fastidious, and, like, he's very... Like, everything has to be neat and, like, ordered. Like, he's a very ordered person. So his behavior in this scene is very funny.
Right. They also use his personality and behavior in general to hide... The I guess you could call it twist. I don't feel like it, you know, this isn't a twisty movie, but
the
reveal basically is that he's one step ahead of Hugh Grant, who's
right. He's known Hugh Grant's been following them the whole time.
Yeah, and one of the things he does, he asks Hugh Grant to take off his shoes before going into his house, and he uses that as an opportunity to bug his shoes. And like, we don't think anything of it because this is the character.
Right, yeah, he's demonstrated himself to be this person already, so.
Yeah.
He probably would have asked him to take off his shoes in either a normal situation. Yeah.
They go in this, and they're dealing with, like, teenage junkies, and I like that the girl that they're after is just like, yeah, I'm sick of this.
Yeah, this place sucks.
Yeah, and just, like, goes willingly, but then the guys are all flexing, and... Yeah. Ray leaves his henchmen behind, and meanwhile downstairs, I love again. This is the thing. I feel like this has been in other Guy Ritchie films, and it's always fucking fun is watching these gangsters interact with teenagers or children.
Yeah,
and there's teenagers just harassing the gangster. Watching right, the car.
The guy driving the car, they're just like, oh man, look at his shoes. Oh, yeah. you should lend us the keys, we'll get you better rims.
Yeah.
And like they're gawking at his watch and everything. So at first he hands them all some cash and just tells them, here, go fuck off. And then they won't fucking leave him alone. So he like flashes his gun and he's like, fuck off.
Yeah. Which foreshadows what's gonna be happening soon.
Yes.
Because, Ray is bringing the girl down to the car. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the henchmen, things get out of hand for him up in the flat.
Yeah.
And one of the teenagers accidentally flies out the window.
Yep. And just face plants on the ground.
Yeah.
And then that winds up really mattering.
Yes, it does. Again, classic Guy Ritchie. Where it's like this one mistake fucking snowballs. And they have a delightful sequence where all the teenagers take photos with their phones.
Right. And Ray gets downstairs and he's like, I'm going to need those phones, lads. Mm-hmm. And then they all take off in different directions. Yeah, so they have to chase them.
Like cats.
Yeah.
And so it's just all these mobsters chasing teenagers around
chasing
the neighborhood.
These kids. Yeah.
One of them's on his bike, and he's just going just fast enough for the guy not to catch him. And he's like, mocking him.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a great scene.
Yeah, and then Ray corners one, and that one like finds another group of teenagers, and basically like these like low-level street thugs are like giving him shit. And he's like, look, I'll buy the phone from you. And
yeah,
like, tell
he's
you
like,
what.
No, I come in peace. It's like, I do want the phone, but I don't want to steal it. I want to buy it from you. And he flashes this big wad of cash.
And they won't compromise. They're like, well, why don't you just leave the money and go running? So finally he has to take out a machine gun.
He pulls out a machine gun.
And he doesn't want to. And he just fires it in the air. And they scatter except for the one kid. points the gun at him.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
It is great, because then the noise he makes, because he basically is like, put down the phone. He treats them like they're animals. Like, put down the phone, and he slowly puts down the phone, and then he just goes like, kick, dip, dip, dip.
Like he's shooing runs. A cat.
Yeah. And he shoos him away, and he goes running.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it's what I like is that there's still a power struggle, because the idea is it's one of my favorite aspects of Guy Ritchie is they're not monsters.
Mm-hmm.
They're just criminals. So they're not going to kill these kids. And so it creates a problem where there's an actual power struggle where these kids kind of have them by the balls, because they're like, we're not going to kill a kid. But these kids, I really want to kill this kid. Like, they're a real pain in the ass.
Really making my life difficult.
Yeah, I love that dynamic. Fucking...
Man.
That ties into... Basically, the kid who falls out the window is, like, the son of a powerful Russian mob guy.
An oligarch, they say. So he hires people to go... kill McConaughey. Yeah, it winds up being a serious problem.
Yeah, I will say, and maybe I've just seen so many movies, the opening fake out was I thought
it was
very
weird,
obvious.
Yeah, we didn't really need it.
Yeah, because there were people in the theater with me who were surprised when it happened. Like, I could hear them go, oh, but like the beginning is Matthew McConaughey going into getting a pint and an egg and sitting down. And then he gets a phone call, and it sounds distressed. And then behind him, there's a person with a gun. And then it cuts to the picture of the shot of his pint, and blood goes psh on it. And it's like, oh, he's dead. And it's like, no, he's not. You don't show him dying. Like, that's clearly someone shot the other guy, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
That fucking sequence.
That's.
We haven't talked about Matthew McConaughey's wife.
Oh, yeah. His wife is great.
Oh, yeah. Who is that actress?
I think her name's Michelle Dockery. Is that right?
Okay. Yeah. She looked very familiar. Oh, shit. I know why she's familiar.
What, is she also in Succession?
No. All right. You watched her recently. I don't know why I want to walk you through this, but it's someone... The only reason why is because we both watched this for... We just watched. And I remember... seeing her and thinking, like, she should be in more movies. I really like her. She played a granddaughter.
Oh, she's Death's granddaughter in The Hogfather.
Yeah, she's Death's granddaughter in The Hogfather.
Sweet.
She was really good in that.
Mm-hmm.
Good for
she's
her.
Channeling similar energy in this movie.
Yes, very similar
energy. She's just
energy.
Like a no bullshit person.
Yeah, her and Matthew McConaughey, I would call them a power couple.
Yes.
She has a garage, lady garage,
mm-hmm.
which that was one of those... Guy Ritchie tends to make movies that are predominantly about, like, men.
Yeah, and this is always, still pretty much the case.
Yes, and that's... It's kind of a shame, because whenever he does have women, like this moment, I was like, I want a movie about this garage.
Like, yeah.
This garage is awesome. I wasn't even sure. It seemed like she was like doing work for like rich people.
It was like a custom
operation. Fancy. Yeah.
And it was all lady mechanics that she was. She only had women employed.
Right, and she like describes it as sort of like a free, like a safe area for mm-hmm. women from men.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, yeah, this is like where women don't have to deal with that bullshit, and they can just work on cars and work here. And then she eventually gets, she gets attacked by Dry Eye.
Yeah.
And
fucking
that's
stone cold shoots both of his henchmen
in
the face.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay. The idea is that Jeremy Strong, that guy, he gives them a quote paperweight that's like a small golden gun with a bunch of little bullets. And the idea is that they keep calling it a paperweight because guns are illegal. It's like having, you know, you can, in certain states, you can buy brass knuckles, but they're called paperweights.
Yeah.
And so she has this little fucking gun, and she gets, basically
it's like a Derringer. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. She, when she shoots the first henchman, it like takes him a second to die. Like he dabs his forehead.
He's like, did I just get shot?
Yeah. And that was delightful, because the idea that they're like laughing at her gun at first, and then it's still funny, but it's like suddenly they're not laughing. Suddenly it's a real problem.
Yeah,
because she's the only one in the room with a gun, and it is a shitty little gun, but it works.
It's enough.
Yeah, she uses her two bullets, and then he attacks her, and that's before that is when they call Matthew McConaughey. So there's a sequence where basically Matthew McConaughey's in that pub. They try to kill him. They don't, and he knows his wife's in danger, so they go. They have to drive across town. And, like, I love that Ray's, like, really concerned about his seatbelt.
Right, he, like, reaches over and buckles his seatbelt for him while he's driving.
And he's like, you're really driving fast. And, of course, he's not wrong, because they get hit by a truck.
They do, yeah.
And that's a delightful... It's very Guy Ritchie. Like, the crash is really well done. And then,
yeah.
And then Matthew McConaughey just like rage limps across the rest of the
way. Yeah, he like limp sprints.
Yeah. And fucking murders Dry Eye.
Yeah, he kills Henry Golding. He fucking shoots him like three times.
Yeah. Which leads to later very brutal result for the
bad guy. Yeah, well, like, he, like, Dry Eye, this will be a complaint of mine. He very suddenly gets all rapey.
Oh, yeah.
It was very abrupt, and it's like, that hasn't really been his character. Like, he's kind of crazy, but, like...
I think the idea is they were trying to create a situation where he wanted to, like, do something unforgivable to Matthew McConaughey, and he's attacking...
And her, because she just killed his two henchmen.
Oh, right. But it doesn't. It felt more like it did. Yeah, you're right. It felt more like Guy Ritchie was like, we need him to do something really terrible right now, so that when Matthew McConaughey walks in, it's a heroic moment.
Yeah, it's that. I'll say that's the one part of the film that I was kind of like, we didn't need this. Like, he could have just. It's very abrupt and out. It's kind of out of nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah. It is out of nowhere. That was like, in that scene, I was like, Jesus. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Like, can we stop using this as a device?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's the problem with the scene, is that it's used as a device. Like, it feels like they were like, we want to like prolong this longer.
Well, he could have just been strangling her. Like, yes. He came there to abduct her.
I agree. What I mean is that it's not used for it's used as a plot device, and that's it.
Yeah.
And this is a horrible thing being used as a plot device.
Right. It's the exact thing you said. It's used to make McConaughey bursting in seem all the more heroic. And it's like, well, it would have been, we were still on his side before.
Yeah,
like,
we're as much on his side as we ever will be. Maybe, maybe it's to set up, because the reveal, again, we've went into, is that the guy trying to buy the weed enterprise all of this and caused all of this. So at the end, Matthew McConaughey basically calls him out on it.
Yeah.
And says, you're going to get going, like, you, like, because he pitches to Matthew McConaughey. He's like, well, look, all this commotion, it's caused this many million, like, $250 worth of, like, he tries to lowball him, not realizing.
Substantially. Yeah.
He
tries
to
offer
$100 million.
Yeah.
And not knowing that Matthew McConaughey knows that he's the reason all of this happened. So then Matthew McConaughey turns it around on him, and he's like, so how much money did you say it cost me? You're right, it did. So what you're going to do is go into this freezer, and you're going to repay me that money. Like, you're going to go on the computer, you're going to give me that money, or you're not getting out of that freezer.
Yeah, and then I'm keeping the business.
And then I'm keeping the business. And he's like, he's like, and this isn't personal. This is the business part. What is personal is what you did with my wife, what you tried to kill my wife. So I also want a pound of your flesh. Here's a
it's
knife.
It's real fucking intense.
And he's just like, all right, so no less. I want this much money and 1 pound of your flesh, or you're not getting out of that freezer. See ya. It's like, Jesus, he just sevened him.
He sure did. He just greed murdered him.
Yeah. He greed murdered the shit out of him. So no, Matthew McConaughey, again, this is why I think we saw this through the lens of Ray, because Matthew McConaughey is, he's a monster.
Yeah, he's a vicious man.
They establish the character. I really liked how he shot this, which was all from behind and not showing
the face.
Yeah,
we never see his face. Yeah.
Where they show the young Matthew McConaughey going up in the world is the idea. Mm-hmm. He grew up in a trailer park, but was really intelligent, got into Oxford, started selling drugs, and then became kind of a maniac of like, you know, like they have a scene where he basically goes into a room with a machete. And then
well, no, they pull the machete on him.
Like
He gets into a situation where he's delivering to these guys and they try to rob him.
Right.
So he hacks them all apart with the machete.
Yeah. So that works really well, because the idea is that he's a maniac, but he only if you fuck him.
Right.
Is what
only,
they're establishing right there.
Right. Only if it's, yeah, it's in retaliation or to defend himself.
Yeah. They do. Yeah. They do a good job with establishing rules like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then sticking to it. Again, with the teenagers with the money, where it's like, look, we're not, money is nothing to us. We'll give you some fucking money to go away.
Yeah.
And then if you don't go away, we're going to take out our guns.
I love what a problem kids are.
Yeah,
in this Guy Ritchie.
Well,
universe.
Again, it's because they're not gonna kill kids.
Yeah,
they're just not. So like they're I love that in Guy Ritchie films where kids are like seem like they're immune. Like when they go to the Brad Pitt and Snatch, that camp, and there's the kids running around.
Yeah.
And like asking them for stuff, and they have to tell them to fuck off. Yeah, kids in the Guy Ritchie universe are a delight. In the crime universe.
Yeah. Crime and, kids.
Yeah. And oh man. So did you think, so after everything Guy Ritchie has done?
Yeah.
I think personally the thing that, because we've talked about other directors like this, is I personally have this beef with Tarantino, which is that I think Tarantino has gotten too over the top with his style, because he has so much power, he can do whatever he wants. We've talked about other directors, though, like that, too, where, like, CGI isn't good for them.
Yes, yeah.
Tim Burton comes to mind, where it's like the style is almost quaint when it's limited, when it's kind of done in a gritty way where it's like camera moves and stuff. So Guy Ritchie is at that point. He's at that, okay, you've done Aladdin, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This still felt like it had his quaintness to me.
Yeah, there's some, he does some over-the-top shit.
But no different than, like, his previous films.
Right, no different than, like, kind of what he would do in, like, Snatch.
Yeah, like, the beginning credits, like, it's all his style.
Mm-hmm.
When he's talking about film and it, like, cuts to a film projector.
Right.
And, like, that felt very Guy Ritchie. But I didn't notice any, like, ridiculous, like, CG shots slowing down the action and zooming through things, you know, like,
yeah, there's nothing like that.
There's no over the top version. It's
I actually appreciated how, like, this is told in a different way than his, and I appreciate that, like, it's still very much Guy Ritchie back on his bullshit, but, like, you know, it's been 20 years since Snatch, so it's like he's got a lot more tricks up his sleeve and some more narrative ideas. So he tells it in a way that's new to his films.
Oh yeah.
And that was cool.
I mean, I think he always sort of had that. You never saw Revolver.
That's true. I never saw Revolver.
You should see Revolver. I want to talk to you about Revolver. Revolver's a very interesting. It's probably the weirdest Guy Ritchie film. Not just in terms of the plot, but in terms of the way it's directed. Mm-hmm. This doesn't spoil anything. I think I've mentioned it. There's a scene where they have like a heist happens. It's not. Yeah, it's a heist. And when that starts happening, it cuts to anime, and it's an anime version of all the characters doing it. Just and mm-hmm. someone's like retelling the story while it's happening, yeah. and it involves people kind of drugged, so it all fits. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of weird shit like that. Like there's some really. He does some very interesting decisions in that are even more over the top. And that was
okay.
That was pre Rock and Roller, I believe. So
okay. Well, I'm comparing it in my mind to Lock, Stock, Snatch and Rock and Roller.
Sure. Yeah.
And it feels very different from those movies.
Yeah, I agree with that because it I mean, I'm trying to remember them all. I haven't. Rock and Roller is the one I've seen. I haven't seen in a while.
That's the one I'm the fuzziest on.
Yeah.
I don't really remember it
Butler,
too well.
That's another one where it's like, fucking yeah, put him in a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah, he was fun in that.
Yeah. Again, he knows exactly like the aggro dudes to put in his movies.
Yeah.
Like the real, like, yeah. I love that this is also Matthew McConaughey playing a guy who's just all about weed. It's like, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, that fits for him.
And the opening credits, like they have his name and it like turns into weed.
Yep.
Like plants.
Very appropriate.
Yeah. That could be appropriate in like any Matthew McConaughey role, really.
Right. That could just be like introducing him anywhere.
Yeah.
Like that could just be his intro video.
Yeah. But I
that
think
just that and some bongos.
Yeah. I think the MVP, who do you think is the MVP of this?
Colin Farrell.
Yeah, I agree.
He's the most fun.
He is. He's so good in this.
Yeah.
He looks great. He's dressed like a grandpa.
Yes. He's perpetually wearing a the tracksuit changes, but he's always yes. wearing a tracksuit.
A tracksuit, like a fishing hat.
Yeah.
And like big glasses.
Mm-hmm. He looks great.
He looks fantastic. he's killing it. He doesn't have a big role in this.
No, it's not very big, but he's the most memorable.
Yeah, and that's easily. Why I want to see more of him.
Mm-hmm.
In a Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
Like I need more. I don't care about the Penguin. I mean, the Penguin will be fun too, but come on. Yeah. Come on, Colin Farrell, be in more Guy Ritchie. Who would you? This is going to be a tough question.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to see in a Guy Ritchie movie?
Daniel Radcliffe.
Nice. That's a good answer.
I want to see Harry Potter in a Guy
That's
Ritchie
good.
Film.
That's really good. I want Tom Hanks. I don't know what that would be.
Tom Hanks.
I don't give a fuck. I kind of want now Tom Hanks in every crime movie. Like I want to see him in a Scorsese crime movie too. Mm-hmm. I want to see Tom Hanks pistol whip Leonardo DiCaprio. Although now that I say it, I want Leonardo DiCaprio in a Guy Ritchie film too.
Yeah, that would be wild.
Yeah, there's so many actors. He's one of those. He's got that Tarantino thing where it's like you just want to see actors be in his movies to see what that would look like.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Bale.
I think that's why both of those directors get that much interest from actors. Like, you know, it's like, I really want to do a movie with this person.
Yeah. They aren't completely related, but I think why I'm more annoyed with Tarantino and less annoyed with Guy Ritchie, it comes down to two things. It comes down to the fact that this movie is not 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. And it also doesn't feel like he does victory laps throughout the movie. Like, it doesn't feel as self-indulgent as Tarantino always does.
No.
And that's the thing, is it's just as over-the-top stylized.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is definitely more... Guy Ritchie is more... it's odd to say, but he's more restrained than Tarantino is, for sure.
That's why the Miramax part where he goes to pitch it, and there, like, that was a moment that was like, no, don't do that.
But it was kind of funny.
It was funny.
Like, it was funny to take that, because he keeps, like, the Hugh Grant keeps pushing his screenplay, so it was funny to see the character take it as far as that.
Oh yeah.
And what was I gonna say? Oh yeah, it's Guy Ritchie has gotten, I mean, he was never mean spirited. But I think he's gotten even less so, if you know what I mean.
I think, does he have kids? He feels like he has kids.
He does have kids, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's gotten less mean in his movies.
Yeah.
Or like less, like he doesn't punish likable characters as much as he used to.
No. Unless he really has to.
Unless he has to, yeah. Tarantino, Tarantino is still pretty, he can be pretty gritty.
Yeah, I also think that he does things more, I don't know, when he wants to, like, say something, it's more telegraphed. It feels like, I don't know, you haven't listened to the Coen Brothers Hail Caesar. They point out in that a lot of Hail Caesar, a lot of the jokes and the ideas are like more subtle versions of what Tarantino was doing in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, it's that where it's Tarantino is not subtle either.
No, and no, again, no one would ever accuse him of being subtle.
Guy Ritchie isn't either, but I feel like what Guy Ritchie isn't trying to make, like, meta points as much.
No, he's trying to tell a fun story.
Yeah.
And I think in general, although Once Upon a Time is hard, because Once Upon a Time, I think, is probably Tarantino's lightest movie.
Yeah.
It's definitely his funniest movie. Guy Ritchie in general is much lighter.
Yes. Yeah, he has a lot more fun with the style.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, it translates well. Having him do, like, Sherlock Holmes movies was like, oh yeah, of course. That's another guy I'd love to see in a more crime Guy Ritchie film is fucking Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
That would be delightful.
That would be pretty amazing, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I can also understand when people are like, I don't like Guy Ritchie. It's like someone saying I don't like cilantro. It's like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It's very strong, and Guy Ritchie doesn't necessarily make meaningful movies, you know?
No, but so what?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, not everything has to mean something.
Oh, no,
for sure. And he's not out there saying that they mean anything. He's just like, nah, these are just right. my little movies.
I think that's the other thing that I like about him is that, like, or compared to Tarantino, is that, like, I bet I would like Tarantino movies more if I didn't know what Tarantino sounded like in interviews. You know what I mean? Like, if Tarantino just kept to himself, like, Guy Ritchie, I know what he looks like, but there's a chance if I saw him on the street, I wouldn't notice. Like, he's not a celebrity. He's just doing his thing.
When I was very taken aback, sort of, or not really taken aback, but I was surprised when I did the Aladdin junket for Collider and got to talk to Guy Ritchie for a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And I was very surprised. Like, he is so soft-spoken and understated. Yeah. Like, he's a very quiet person.
He doesn't feel like he has an ego.
Like,
and what he does, like, he seems like he has a very, and you would know more than me considering you met him, but I get the impression that there's not much of an ego.
Didn't seem like it.
Yeah, which is actually part of the plot of Revolver, which you have to watch. But it seems like he knows exactly what he does. That movie's, you know, he makes fun fucking movies about crime guys wearing, like, that's the thing, everybody in a Guy Ritchie movie, the way they look and act, it might as well be a superhero movie. Like, yeah, they're just as realistic to the world.
Right, they're all cartoon characters.
Yeah, yes, they're all in disguise. Bricktop? You look at Bricktop and you're like, what the fuck is this?
Love that guy.
Big-ass glasses, and it's just like, what a ridiculous creature.
Put a leash on a turkey before she gets bit.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's fucking great.
That's one of my favorite villains because he's the perfect combination of a villain that you enjoy watching, but you absolutely want to see dead.
He's such a son of a bitch.
Yeah, he's not. He's not like, oh, look how fun. Like, he's so bad, but he's good. We all love him. He's not an anti-hero. He's just like, no, this guy sucks. But every time he walks into the room, I'm riveted.
He's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, can't take my eyes off him.
Yeah. Man. So, yeah, I'm excited for the fucking...
The Cash Truck movie,
The Cash Truck. Guy Ritchie and Jason Statham.
This movie felt... Now that we were doing the comparison to Tarantino, there's something I wanted to bring up.
Sure.
Is there's a bit of casual racism in this movie that hasn't really been in other Guy Ritchie films.
Yes.
It's just them... Like, they keep calling Jeremy Strong's character the Jew. And they make a couple of, like, Hugh Grant, and I get it, it's Hugh Grant's character and he's a slime ball, but he makes a couple of Asian cracks.
Yes.
When introducing Dry Eye, Henry Golding.
When Hugh Grant did it, it was like, right, I get it because we don't, this character is exactly the kind of slime ball.
He's a slime ball. And I think he, oh no, wait, excuse me. I was going to say, I think he was the one that kept calling Jeremy Strong the Jew, but I think a few other characters do it too.
Okay. Is it through his lens?
Maybe,
because they do.
It might
that's
just
the
be
other
Hugh
thing
Grant's
they do.
Character. Yeah,
they do a unreliable narrator situation.
That's, they do.
They do
yeah.
it a few times. I'm not really excusing it because also I also don't think any of these characters. This is the thing with Guy Ritchie movies. It's like, well, these are all bad people.
For the most part.
But yes. That is. I'll have to watch
just,
it again.
It was.
They
just,
do a couple scenes where he describes something that happens, and then he's like,
yeah.
"Well, that's not what happened.
That's not
he's
actually
like, yeah,
what
but that
happened."
Would be cooler.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh,
that
and
is
they call
weird.
And they call Henry Golding like the Chinaman.
Yeah, it's there's like, a lot of that.
It stuck out to me because I may just haven't seen them in a long time, but I don't remember them talking like Tarantino gangsters.
Right.
In his previous movies, who just casually throw out racial slurs all the time.
And if that's... It's weird, because like if that's just the case with this one, and then the other ones don't really do that, then it's he was clearly going for something.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if he got the thing he was going for. Because,
every time
that did happen, it was kind of like, I don't... All right. Like, I don't see why that needed to be in there.
Yeah, I don't understand why we needed that.
Yeah.
Like,
if a character is just supposed to be a racist, that's one thing. But when it's multiple characters, I'll have to watch again to notice what characters. Because
it's like, I'm obviously not the authority to say this, because, like, saying Chinaman is not, like, super terrible, but it is sort of like saying a colored person. Like, it's, like, very antiquated.
It's grandpa racist.
Yeah, it's like, why... What?
It's like talk. It's yeah. It's like
why
talking
would you
about
say that
the like, Italians like it's
yeah. It's like a really it is yeah. I don't know. It's
I don't
just
know.
Odd and it really stuck out to me. I was like, why is this in here?
Well, the only reason like it's sticking out to me more now that you're pointing out that I don't think the others. Well, no, the Pikey stuff was pretty racist in Snatch.
Yeah, I guess so.
They say other words for them that
are not good words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's there is, but again,
well, gypsy, and they say gypsy in this movie, and that's not the correct term.
And so I think there's always been some level. It's hard because here's the other thing is they're so British, and
they
like
are
it's
fucking British,
it's like
yeah.
another language sometimes. Like he literally will put subtitles. He put subtitles in this one. Every now and then he'll put in a subtitle for the Americans,
right? So, when they're using British slang,
yeah. And when they're calling each other cunts, and I know that's like different there. So I'm like, I don't fucking know. I don't know what half of these. I don't know what's the racist stuff anymore. You speak regular, you British weirdos. I guess that's the racism, the thing I'm saying in my head about them. But
it's like a weird template that like Quentin Tarantino started, where it's just like, oh, I guess gangsters are all just racists.
Right.
Like, that's weird.
Like, yeah, and, well, I think what it is, and it's definitely way more in the fucking Tarantino universe.
For sure. This is not on that level at all.
Oh, not at all. But it always, to me, feels like, and in this, though, but I always feel like, oh, you just want an excuse to say the racist things. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. Is whenever in Tarantino universe, right. They're all, like, dropping, again, Pulp Fiction, Tarantino shows up for 5 minutes, says the N-word a bunch at Samuel Jackson
into
and
Sam
leaves.
Jackson's face.
Yeah, and I was like, I can't help but feel like you just wanted to say the N-word a bunch, Tarantino.
Right, well, he sort of fetishizes black culture.
Yeah, he fetishizes a lot of things.
Yeah, pretty much everything, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it's definitely not anywhere near that. In this movie, but it still gives you the feeling of like a little kid who's learned swear words.
Yeah, all the
where it's like why do they have to? Why do they have to be racist?
I feel like
randomly racist.
Right, I feel like they bring up Henry Golding's race in every scene he's in.
Yeah, and I don't know if
it was jarring.
I don't know if the idea is that it's supposed to add a little extra edge.
I guess, like, what edge though? It just makes people uncomfortable.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I just wanted to see what you thought of that.
It's weird because it is. I'm now thinking of all the like other movies. Like, for example, Clerks 2, a movie that people may or may not like, has a scene where Randall just lists off every racist term. And he does it clinically.
Right, but he's also the idiot in that scene.
He's also the idiot. But when you go back and you watch Clerks, the first Clerks is the whole point is the things they're saying were very shocking, especially at the time when they came out. Mm-hmm. That was the whole thing. So when you're making Clerks 2, you have to be like, well, we have to do that again. So where do we go? And you go to racist words. You go to taboos. I'm not making a judgment call on it, but you see the reasoning, like why Kevin Smith was like, well, this is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be shocking now that I'm going to put in this to match Clerks. And I'm with crime stuff. I'm wondering if that's like some part element of it too, is like, we need to always be shocking the audience. We want the audience to say, oh, why do you have to use those words? And saying fuck is just not enough anymore. So there's this like arms race.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case.
Maybe it's so that we're never,
for the record, this isn't about justifying it. It's about trying to figure out why it's happening.
Why do it? Yeah.
Yeah. Why are they doing it?
Why would you do that? I don't know. Maybe it's trying to remind you that these characters aren't good people. I don't know.
Yes. But
I may be giving him too much credit.
Yeah. I'd want to watch it again because I want to see which characters use those phrases.
Well, I know it's definitely Hugh Grant, definitely McConaughey, definitely Jeremy Strong.
Yeah. Wait, Hugh Grant, McConaughey, and Jeremy Strong? I mean, those are all bad people.
Yes.
So yeah, that helps. I'm wondering if Ray says stuff like that. I know Colin Farrell has that whole conversation where the guy calls the other guy a black cunt, I think.
Yeah, he does.
And he says it's racist, and Colin Farrell debates him on it, and he's like, he's not saying all black people, he's just saying you.
He's saying you specifically.
You specifically. Yeah, you're black and you're also being a cunt, so like, and yeah, it's very Guy Ritchie.
It's funny.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a well done sequence. Yeah. I mean, again, it's fucking Colin Farrell saying fucking Guy Ritchie lines.
Yeah, in his Irish brogue.
Yeah, it's hard not to melt for that, specifically that.
When he says when he says the word film, I was like, my God, we need this in every movie. Like, film.
Film.
Film is how he said it.
Oh, they're so silly.
What is
they're
that?
They're so silly
what is
over
that
there,
voice?
Wherever, in those other areas.
Yeah.
Fucking Middle Earth over there. Fucking weirdos. What are they doing? What are they doing over there? Do we know? Do you know?
No, I don't. Yeah. That's a gag in Get Him to the Greek, if you remember. Yeah, it's Jonah Hill gets into a taxi and the guy, he's like, I need to go to the airport. Oh, and, and the guy lists off a bunch of like fucking wacky ass street names. He's like, what the fuck is this, Middle Earth? Just take me to the airport.
It is. I've been to London once, and I was London and a bunch of like small areas of England. Morecambe was one of them. Mm-hmm. Like all throughout, I was there for maybe a month and a half, and they are just delightful. I will say that. Our first night there, we were like on the streets. And like we were chilly, and a hobo just literally gave us the shirt off his back and was like, "Here you go," and walked away. And we're like, "What the fuck was that? This guy give us a shirt?" Like, everybody was delightful. I think it's because we have funny voices there, so everybody wants to talk to you.
Well, no, our voices sound normal.
Oh, okay. Right, they're walking around like, "Can you believe our funny fucking voices?"
Yeah. Gosh, we're why ridiculous. Do we talk like this?
Why are we doing this? We've been pretending to talk like this for centuries now, just to fuck with the Americans.
We're in too deep now. We can't.
Yeah.
We can't call it off.
Right.
The box has been opened.
But like, they might suspect something. Let's release another Guy Ritchie movie.
Have Guy Ritchie just invent slang.
Invent some real hogwash. He could. He could invent anything he wants.
We wouldn't know. Yeah. I wouldn't have any idea.
I have no fucking clue.
No clue.
God damn redcoats.
Mm-hmm. Fucking Brits.
I'm glad we got to end this on a little bit of racism.
That's
it's fine. They did, you know.
Yeah. That's like, I was about to be like, it's not racism, it's xenophobia.
Oh, okay, good. That's true.
Nah, it's more nationalism. Oh, good.
Nationalism. There we go.
Perfect.
Some good nationalism
good
against the British.
Fashion nationalism.
They
All right.
started it, Tom.
They did, in fairness. Yeah,
they started it.
We continued it.
Yes, we continued
We continued the grand tradition of imperialism, but they did start it.
Yeah. They rolled in here with their lobster backs and they told us what to do.
Okay, I think that's a sode.
I think that's a sode, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm.
Did we? I feel like we didn't talk about the. We did talk about the movie.
We talked about enough.
Yeah. We just had a delightful conversation about it. Anyway, you should check out our Patreon at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have exclusive podcasts there, like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac. Mm. We have a new tier where you can be a Hypecast producer and we'll give you a shout out. There's tons to do. We mail you stuff.
Yeah.
Even if you're overseas, we'll mail you some
shit.
Fun stuff.
We'll throw some stamps on something. I don't know what it's going to be.
I did it already. It's not that expensive. I sent something to fucking one of our tier people is from Australia.
Oh,
and
word.
So I went to the post office like a scared child, and I was like, how do I make this go to Australia? And he was like, it's one stamp, and it's really easy. And I was like, oh, cool.
One stamp? Jesus.
It was just the one. It was just the one stamp. It wasn't big. I wasn't sending, like, you know, a package.
Mm-hmm.
We're just a little letter. You'll get a little letters from us with stickers and shit. We sent out Tom and Jeff Watch Batman stickers this round, and then in like a couple months, I got some Fox Mulder's a Maniac stickers just sitting here, just ready
just
to go.
Taking up space.
Yeah.
Y'all, if you don't want to wait that long, you can check out our store, tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed, where you can check out stickers and mugs and t-shirts, prints, posters, onesies. We do onesies. Yeah. Anything your little heart desires, you can have sent to your home.
Right.
And then it will be yours.
And it is a little heart.
It is a tiny heart.
I believe most of our viewership is pigeons. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of pigeons listening
pigeons,
to us.
Pigeons, mice, some ferrets, very tiny hearts.
Yeah, a couple ferrets. Yeah, very little itty bitty hearts.